Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 218 event, which takes place in Detroit, Michigan. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had no premium bets for UFC Fight Night 122, but we did win our one-unit free bet on Wang Guan. Back to the present, UFC 218 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Justin Willis, who is 5-1, and Alan Crowder, who is 9-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Willis -210, the comeback on Crowder at +160. Right now, looking over a sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu, it's currently -210 for Willis, and Crowder's at +175. So line margins have tightened up. And again, two-way action coming into this fight, nothing significant coming in either way. This should be a good fight. So I think 2-1 is definitely a fair price for this, as I think that Willis is the better fighter of the two here, but both these guys definitely have some potential in the heavyweight division. Both these guys have power. Both of these guys have athleticism to go along with it. So with technical skill sets, it makes them for a tough out, especially in the UFC heavyweight division. So getting into Crowder first, I mean, he was, you know, found, I guess, or got the shot in the UFC from Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. He had a pretty solid win in his official UFC debut on the Dana White show. So this is kind of his second UFC fight, if you count that as the first. He's got some skill. He's got decent striking, pushes forward. He's got good hands with knockout power to go along with it, mixes in some low kicks to his attack as well. He also looks for takedowns and does decent work on the ground with his ground and pound, and he also has a sub game to go along with it. So he's a pretty complete fighter overall. At times on the feet, though, I think he could be a little bit predictable and a little bit slow. And I think that's where Willis is probably going to step in here and have some success. I mean, we all know Willis, of course, trains at a really solid camp with AKA and crew, of course, and he moves well for his size. I mean, he's got decent boxing, decent speed, hand speed, I should say, power and decent technique to go along with it. So I was very impressed. I mean, looking back at before Willis made his official UFC debut, you could see there were some signs of, you know, of potential from Willis. But I think in his UFC debut over a very tough game opponent in Mulhern, he definitely put on a decent show, a decent performance. He deserved to win that fight over a very game, again, opponent in Mulhern. So I think that Willis showed a lot in that fight. Again, it's not high-level UFC title contender type of heavyweight fight that he faced there. But still, I mean, I think he put on a clinic with his speed, with his power, with his athleticism there. I mean, the guy has the complete package. He can mix in his wrestling as well. So I think these guys are fairly evenly matched, but I think what it's going to come down to, Willis is going to be a little bit faster. I think Willis is going to land a little bit more frequently. And I think along with that, it could get Crowder in trouble as the fight progresses a little bit as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if Willis ends up finding, you know, the button on Crowder and putting him out along the way. So my pick is Willis. I think he's going to win probably by knockout as it goes. If not, if it hits a scorecards, I think Willis is probably going to edge him out there as well. So the pick is Willis in what should be a fairly competitive fight with all that said.
I'd say the biggest difference between these guys is refinement. Willis and Crowder have similar levels of experience, but Willis has been sharpening his tools over at American Kickboxing Academy with Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez, and Crowder's just been off in North Carolina. And honestly, Willis is just a lot further along, even though both of these guys are still very young in their UFC heavyweight careers. Willis, I just think, has a little bit better wrestling. I think that he has a little bit more of a well-rounded game. I think he's better if he gets put in a bad situation than Crowder is. Watching Crowder fight in that Tuesday Night Contender Series, I mean, he had a pretty competitive fight early on, and then he basically won because his opponent had absolutely atrocious conditioning, and Crowder was just able to get him on his back when he couldn't even like lift his legs, and then get a TKO finish in the last minute of the third round. I think if Willis had fought Crowder's opponent and that guy was gassing the way he was, I think Willis would have put him out in the second round probably. I just think Willis is the better overall fighter. I think he has just a little bit more better tools. And while Crowder will be active and aggressive early, I think as this fight goes, the skill of Willis will win out. So unless Crowder can take Willis out quickly, which I think would be surprising, I see Willis just wearing him out and eventually either getting a stoppage or winning a relatively one-sided decision. So my pick is going to be Justin Willis. Now dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Jeremy Kimble, who is 15-6, taking on Dominic Reyes, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Reyes -405, the comeback on Kimble at +285. Right now looking over five dimes. So Reyes -400, the comeback on Kimble +325. So line margins again have tightened up a little bit. And two action is coming into this fight as well. Had to go high with this line. I mean, I think Reyes is obviously one of the better light heavyweight prospects. Again, talk about training with a good camp, you know, training with Blades and Crew. And the striking ability on Reyes is something special. I mean, the guy's long for the weight class. He's powerful. He's got great technique. He's a southpaw. I mean, there's a lot to love about Reyes. I mean, his kicking game, he's got good hands, just striking ability in general, obviously, is where it's at with him. But he also has a pretty complete game. I mean, I think he's no slouch on the ground. He's got decent takedown defense, but the ground game is still a work in progress with him, and he's going to get better, especially, like I said, he's training with solid training partners as well along the way. So he's going to keep on improving. And I think here for Kimble, I mean, Kimble's kind of fallen in love with his striking as well as of late. I mean, he's a pretty well-rounded fighter in some ways. I mean, obviously, Kimble, in my opinion, has a bit of offense on the ground, but defensively he lacks submission defense, that is, on the ground as well. So Kimble also more of a striker. So you got basically a striker versus striker matchup, but both these guys have a little bit more to their game than that, really speaks for itself. So that being said, I think this striking versus striking matchup for Kimble is not going to fare too well. I mean, Kimble does have a little bit of power in his hands. I think he at times gets a little bit underrated, but in this matchup, it should be a nightmare for him. I think he's going to probably be on his back foot. Reyes is going to be pushing forward a little bit, and Reyes is going to be laying in the hard shots, and eventually Kimball's going to kind of crumble underneath just the power and the effectiveness of Reyes' striking. I think that's how it's going to go down. So I had to go high. The line's staying high for a reason. I wouldn't be surprised if it climbs up to 5-1 before fight time or so, with a little bit more hype and a little bit more parlay action coming in, obviously Reyes' way. So I do respect Kimball. I think he's a solid fighter, and glad that he got on the UFC roster, but I think this fight is just terrible for him. So the pick is Reyes, and inside the distance it is.
I'll give Kimble credit for winning the winnable fights, like his last one against Josh Stansbury, but considering how terrible he looked in his UFC debut, I know it was short notice against De Lima, but I mean, he got destroyed in that fight, and it just did not look like he could handle a really heavy puncher. And to me, Dominic Reyes has just this beautiful, sneaky power with a really crisp left hand that can just devastate opponents. And Reyes, in that UFC debut, I mean, he landed that left hand about two or three times, and every time he landed it, it hurt Christensen bad. So considering that Kimball's a smaller fighter with, I think, just as bad of a chin, if not worse, than Christensen, there's a possibility here that Reyes could just take Kimball out in a hurry. My only concern with Reyes is if he gets cocky or if he underestimates Kimble and does not take him seriously. Maybe Kimble could land something heavy, because Kimble does have power, and Kimble might be capable of getting a takedown if need be. So there are possibilities for Kimble to win, but for me, they really mostly rely on Reyes being cocky and not taking him seriously and leaving his chin exposed and just making a really dumb rookie mistakes. I think Reyes is better than that. I mean, this guy has the potential to be a contender if he can showcase that he can defend takedowns along the way, because on the feet, he is devastating. So I like Reyes. I think he wins by first round knockout. Next up, we drop down to the welterweight division for a bout between Saba Hamasi, who is 11-6, and Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Al-Hassan -265 to come back on Homasi at +185. Right now, looking over five times, Al-Hassan -240 to come back on Homasi is at +200. So line margins have tightened up again, and there is two-way action coming into this fight. This should be a fun one. I mean, Homasi, of course, trains at American Top Team. He's an Ultimate Fighter veteran. Al-Hassan has had a lot of hype before he made his official UFC debut as well. And since then, I mean, obviously going 1-1, you know, we've seen some really fun stuff from Al-Hassan. I mean, the guy definitely has some athleticism, some power, some skill on the feet. He definitely needs to improve his game. I mean, the guy in his last fight, unfortunately for him, was taken down and ended up losing a split decision because, I mean, Akhmedov was able to just basically grind him out along the way and have some success doing so. But Al-Hassan was hard to keep down. So, I mean, he is improving that. And it's good to see that at least he's not going to settle for, you know, getting laid on for all the entire round or whatnot. So he's going to improve that ground game. He's going to continue to do that. Of course, he's got a judo background to go along with it. So I think that stylistically was a good learning experience for him. And Homasi, he's going to come in probably trying to take this fight to the ground as well, because even though Homasi is more well known for his striking ability, the guy does have some wrestling as well. And of course, coming from American Top Team, you know, he's going to have a good game plan coming into this fight. So this is going to be a test for both fighters. That's why it should be exciting. I mean, both these guys are primarily known for their striking ability and their knockout power as well. So that's definitely not a bad thing for us to all watch, because I think it probably does end up playing out more so on the feet than on the ground, despite Homasi trying to take this fight to the ground at times. So, I mean, this is a test, because Homasi definitely has enough knockout power that, you know, at welterweight, he could do some damage. And if you let your guard on, he could definitely put your lights out. But I think more so than anything, I trust Al-Hassan's chin a little bit more. Homasi has been knocked out three times throughout his career. And anytime he does face one of those strikers, it seems, that can put his lights out. Unfortunately for him, as the fight progresses, it seems like it does go that way. So hard to kind of pick against Al-Hassan here in this spot, even though I think Homasi is a very dangerous opponent. And I wouldn't recommend a play at this line, honestly. I think Al-Hassan at -240, you just kind of stay away from it. I am going to pick him to win, but is there true value as far as a betting angle on Al-Hassan? I don't think so, because Homasi, I think, is a little bit too dangerous to kind of lay that kind of chalk on Hassan right now. So the pick is Al-Hassan. I think he probably gets the job done, and probably by knockout along the way. And for his sake, I hope he does, because he does need to kind of get back on track, even though it was a respectable split decision type of loss, competitive fight against Akhmedov. A lot of people had high expectations for Al-Hassan, and it needs to kind of continue, and he needs to get back on track with that. So the pick is Al-Hassan. I think he does do it by knockout.
I don't see this fight being that competitive. To me, this just looks like a build-up fight for Razak Al-Hassan to kind of get back to where he was before the Akhmedov loss. Homasi, I really don't think that he's really a UFC caliber type of fighter. I mean, yeah, he trains at a good gym, but there's plenty of fighters that train at good gyms that don't become much of anything. And Homasi, to me, is one of those guys. I mean, he was on that season of The Ultimate Fighter, but he didn't really do anything on that season either. I mean, he was just kind of a guy. And he hasn't fought in a year, and in that time period, in that one fight that he did have, he got smashed by Tim Means. And I think Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is a guy with much more power than Tim Means. Now, I'm not saying Al-Hassan has all the skills of Means, but I do feel like he has a lot more potential, and this is a guy that the UFC can get behind with the judo background, with the insane power that he possesses. And as Nick mentioned, he did get taken down a lot in his last fight, but I mean, he did work his way back up. He made Akhmedov work for it, but I mean, he still did lose a decision, and he was facing a guy that he basically needed to knock out before he could get taken down. And Akhmedov was able to win that battle. Homasi, I don't think that he has nearly the takedown ability of Omari Akhmedov. So I can see Homasi getting a takedown here or there, but I don't see him keeping Al-Hassan down. And I think at some point Al-Hassan connects with something nasty and puts his lights out. Al-Hassan isn't the most technical striker out there, but just with the power he possesses, it doesn't take much. And I think Homasi is definitely vulnerable there, at least defensively. I think Homasi, if this is just a pure stand-up fight, might be able to hold his own, but I mean, I think that he's going to be a little scared coming in because of Al-Hassan's power, and I think that that will show. And
at some point Al-Hassan connects and puts him out. So my pick is going to be Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Now, headlining the Fight Pass prelims, we have a women's strawweight contest between Amanda Bobby Cooper, who is 3-3, and Angela Magana, who is 11-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cooper -350 to come back, and Magana at +250. Right now, looking over five times, it is actually Cooper -400 to come back on Magana at +325. So opening Cooper -350, I thought, man, that's a little tough. I mean, Cooper is a pretty solid fighter. Of course, she had a good run on the Ultimate Fighter as well. And I think a lot of fans out there like her, respect her. But, I mean, let's face it, she's about a 500 fighter, and she's opening up 350, even if it is against Magana or not. It's a little bit tad high, but that being said, right now, like I said, -400 for Cooper and +325. Early action coming in Cooper's way, so I'm glad I went that high, because stylistically speaking and why the betting action is coming in Cooper's way, it's just a tough matchup for Magana. I mean, I know Magana is a pretty solid fighter overall. She's faced a lot of solid competition throughout her career, even, you know, before the Ultimate Fighter or whatnot. She's just been an experienced veteran. She doesn't, I guess, shy away from a tough fight. So you got to respect that. And she comes to fight. I mean, she definitely brings it, and she usually makes her opponents kind of fight down to her level a little bit. And at times it's a little bit more competitive than you'd think it would be in a fight. So Magana has that kind of ability in her, but truthfully speaking, she doesn't have great striking. She doesn't have great wrestling. She doesn't have a great submission game. She's just an okay fighter. That's kind of a tough out, because she does have some heart and some skill to go along with it. And, you know, she talks a good game or whatever as well. So she's not going to be an easy out for Cooper, because, again, Cooper does excel, I think, I mean, above and beyond in almost every area that Magana does. I mean, I think Cooper obviously is the better striker here overall. I think Cooper's wrestling's coming in to her own. She's obviously against other grapplers and other people that kind of utilize that game plan, Cooper's going to be in trouble. But against people that are more neutral, that can mix things up a little bit more and don't necessarily depend on their grappling or wrestling, I think Cooper could do really well. And this is one of those fights that I think can go back and forth in that department, but I think Cooper actually has the advantage there as well. So I think Cooper has the advantage on the feet. She has the advantage on the ground. I think she's more of the finisher. Again, I mean, she doesn't have a ton of, I guess, experience to match Magana's there, but I think she can. If there's going to be a finish in this fight, it's probably Cooper over Magana. So there's a lot to like about Cooper in this fight. That's why I opened her so high. I'd be surprised if she loses this fight to Magana. There is a good chance it does probably hit the scorecards, because, again, Magana's a tough girl to stop. I don't think she's going to give up. She's not going to quit. And the way she's talking, you know, running her mouth, she's going to come to fight. She's going to come to win this fight. So I think it's going to be too hard for her, though. I think Cooper does probably get the job done. So at the price right now, I don't recommend actually laying -400 chalk on Cooper, not at this point of her career, even if it is against Magana. And I know a lot of you guys want to fade her out there, but there's no value left at this point right now either. So stay away from it as far as the bet goes. But as far as the pure pick goes, again, it's one of those cases that I just think Cooper is going to be too much for Magana, so I'm picking her to win.
Honestly, I think people are just underestimating Amanda Bobby Cooper a little bit, and rightfully so. I mean, her official MMA record, not counting some of her UFC tough fights, is 2-3, but UFC counts the semifinals of the Ultimate Fighter on the show as actual fights, so that's why they have her at 3-3. So I can understand why people might be not thinking Amanda Bobby Cooper's the best, but you gotta look at who she's lost to, okay? She lost to Tatiana Suarez in her tough finale. And Suarez, in my opinion, is a top 10 women's strawweight, one of the best on the roster, the best wrestler, a prospect to absolutely keep an eye on. She lost to Cynthia Calvillo in her last fight, and that's somebody the UFC has really gotten behind, another top 10 women's strawweight. And then back in Invicta, she lost to Aspen Ladd, who is an undefeated, I believe, and made her UFC debut recently with a TKO victory at bantamweight. So you got to give Amanda Bobby Cooper a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I mean, she has not taken the easy road in her MMA career, especially professionally. And when Amanda Bobby Cooper fought somebody more on her level, she dominated against El Mos. So I think Nick was being nice with Angela Magana. I mean, she's somebody that had a decent career back in the early days of women's MMA, but she's been exposed, in my opinion, since she kind of has started fighting more modern fighters. I mean, Michelle Waterson just embarrassed her when they fought. And honestly, I don't think Waterson's one of the elite women's 115 pounders. And she was just so much better than her. It was ridiculous. And then, of course, Tisha Torres just destroyed her. I mean, outstruck her 3-1 over the course of 3 rounds. I mean, it was just a one-sided shellacking. So Magana has fought 2 fights in the UFC and has been absolutely embarrassed in both of them. And I think that this will be number 3. I don't think it'll be that close. I don't know if it'll be a finish or not, but I think Amanda Bobby Cooper steamrolls her here because she is a better striker. She's better on the ground and she's way younger and she just has a lot more to prove and a lot more potential. So this is Amanda Bobby Cooper all the way. Now kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have Felice Herrig, who is 13-6. Taking on Courtney Casey, who is 7-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Herrig -135 to come back on Casey at -105. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's Herrig -150 to come back on Casey. He's at +130, so line margins have tightened up again. A little bit more action coming in Herrig's way. This is a tough fight. I mean, both of these ladies, you know, Brian and I were talking a little bit before we started taping here, and we've been impressed with both of these ladies as of late. I mean, I think both of them are fighting the best that they've ever been in their careers thus far. I mean, if you look at Herrig's recent resume, I mean, Herrig's had her ups and downs, and I think she's actually had more hype, you know, always had a little bit more hype from the fans than deserved in most cases. But as of late, after that Paige Van Zandt loss, I mean, she beat Kern, which was, you know, at this point, I think obviously people know she should beat a girl like Kaylin Kern. I mean, so it wasn't a huge win for her, but then following it up with a upset win over Grasso and then another upset win over Kish, which that Grasso and Kish fights for me both really stand out because I think not too long ago, Herrig would have probably lost those fights. So it's the improvement, the focus, everything in her game right now is on point. And I think Herrig is never been more confident and never been more willing to prove that she belongs towards the top of the 115-pound roster in the UFC. So there's a lot of good things to like about Herrig, but you can say a lot of the same things about Casey. In my opinion, I've always known that Casey was a talented fighter. I mean, well-rounded fighter, a finisher type of fighter, no doubt about that. But in the UFC, at times, I mean, obviously she made her UFC debut against Calderwood on short notice. She came out really well, better in that fight against Calderwood because I thought that she had a chance to pull off the upset there. She looked good early on, but then she started gassing again. She took the fight on short notice, came into play a little bit, started gassing after she almost finished Calderwood early, lost that fight, followed up by a lackluster performance against Ham. But then after that, I mean, she went on a nice little run. I mean, the only loss she had, you know, in between, I believe, a few fights that she won. She won a couple fights and then had a loss to Gadella, but she actually hung in there better than I expected against Claudia Gadella as well. So she proved to me that her conditioning is getting a little bit better. She backs all that up with a win over a former number one 115-pound woman in the world in Jessica Aguilar. So that's pretty impressive as well, in my opinion, because I mean, you have, you know, I know Aguilar right now is past her prime, obviously, and she's no longer the strawweight queen. But for a while there, a lot of people believed that she was the best in the strawweight division. So Casey coming in, picking her off as well. Improvement, man. I mean, I really see it from both of these ladies right now. They're both ultra confident. Like I said, both of them have skill everywhere the fight takes place. It's going to be a close fight. I mean, it's all going to come down who gets top position on the ground and who can basically, I think, control the tempo of the fight, who gets a little bit more busy on the feet. Casey's going to be a little bit taller. She's going to have a little bit more length on the ground. It could go either way. Both of these ladies are susceptible to getting taken down, and they kind of don't do as much as you would like to see about scrambling off their backs at times once they are put on their back. So it's going to come down who gets top position, like I said. I think, to me, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Casey at this point because I do like what I've seen of her as late, and she does have those advantages. Like I said, she's going to have a little bit of size over Herrig, and I think her ability to possibly get top position on Herrig on the ground, her ability to probably land some strikes on the feet as well along the way, I think she's just going to be a little bit sharper in what should be a very competitive fight. And right now, with the line +130, I do think it's a dog or pass situation regardless of a pick on Casey, because this is a pure coin flip type of fight. So anybody you get at plus money here, there definitely has to be some value. So for me, as far as a bet goes, I would recommend siding with Casey a little bit at this spot. As far as a pick goes, I'm going to go that way as well. I think it's another chance that Casey does come in and pulls off of, you know, kind of stops the run of Herrig as of late. I think it's another good chance that Casey comes in here and pulls off another impressive win. So It should be a good fight. Should be a fun fight. I'm expecting it to probably go all three rounds and what should be a war. So my pick is officially going to be Casey to get the W.
This is a very evenly matched contest. Felice Herrig, to me, is a bit more technical than Courtney Casey. I think on the feet, with her kickboxing background, Herrig probably should get the better of Casey. I mean, Casey did lose in the stand-up to Seohee Ham when Ham was just being really active. I mean, that was a very competitive fight, but I can see Felice Herrig winning a stand-up fight if she can keep this upright. On the ground, Herrig is also a little bit of the more technical grappler. She has showcased an improved ground game every time we've seen her inside the octagon. I think she can throw up some pretty good submissions. She can sweep. She has decent control of her opponent. She's able to keep them down or advance to dominant positions. So those are all things that are in Felice Herrig's favor. But what's going against her here is Courtney Casey is the bigger, stronger, more powerful fighter. And I think that that could take its toll on Herrig trying to use the technique. It might just wear her out against somebody that is where you're just going to have to expend a lot more energy than usual against your opponent. So I can see Herrig having her moments in this fight, and I expect this fight to be very close. But I think as this fight wears on, I think Courtney Casey is going to drain Felice Herrig a little bit. And I can see her kind of passing by her as the bout goes on. Kind of like how Paige VanZant did. Because people forget Felice Herrig won the first round against Paige VanZant, but they forget about it because Paige just wore her down and then just obliterated her in the second and third rounds. Getting top position and just dropping a ridiculous amount of punches on her face. So I can see Felice Herrig winning one of the first two rounds, but I think Courtney Casey kind of takes over as this fight goes on, just with it being a little bit too much for Herrig in terms of strength and size. I can see Casey pushing her against the fence. I can see Casey getting top position at some point on the ground, and Casey has a lot more damage she can put out from top position. Like with ground and pound, Casey, I mean, she can end fights. And I just don't see Herrig ending a fight or this fight unless it's with a random out of nowhere type of submission. And I think Casey should be able to defend that. So my pick is going to be Courtney Casey as well. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have David Tamer, who is 6-1, taking on Dragar Close, who is 8-0-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Talk about a great fight. I opened Tamer -170 to come back on Close at +130. Right now it's Tamer -175 to come back on Close at +155. Tough line to set. Tough fight to call. You got two serious up-and-coming future title contenders, I think. I mean, this is the ability that both these guys have in Tamer and Close. I know the line's long as far as getting in the mix for the lightweight strap right now. And again, I'm not saying that either one of these guys is ready, but I think these guys have showed all sorts of signs of kind of climbing that ladder and potentially making it towards the top and getting a shot eventually. I mean, Close in his last win over that Casey was nothing but impressive. I think a lot of people were counting him out. Obviously, he was a pretty decent underdog. I mean, he showed his grittiness, his toughness, his just grinding style that he comes at you with. He's got decent stand-up. He's proven that time and time again as well. And he's got a wrestling game and just a dominant control type of game to go along with it. So there's a lot of good things to like about Close. And that's why it's going to be a tough fight for Tamer. I know a lot of people for Tamer are going to be sold on the fact that he came out and just got a great win over Venata. Lando is obviously one of the guys that a lot of people respected. He almost came out there in his UFC debut and defeated Ferguson with his wrestling, with his striking ability. I mean, Lando Venata is definitely a hyped fighter, and a win over him puts you on the hype train big time. And Tamer got that W over him, and he deservingly so. So I believe Brian and I both picked him actually in that spot too. So we got the right call here. But in this fight, it's different, man. It's a tough fight. I know, like I said, Lando Venata is definitely has a lot of similarities to Close because he's a wrestling based fighter that has some striking as well. But Close is a different type of grinder. I think Close is going to actually kind of utilize that game plan a little bit more so than a guy like Venata did. So it's tough. I mean, like I said, I like both these guys. Both these guys have made me some cash at the betting window by being underrated as well. So I think prospect versus prospect basically here going at it. I can see it realistically going either way as well. I mean, Tamer, if it stays on the feet, make no mistake, Tamer is the better striker. He's going to be the one landing the cleaner shots, the more technical striker. He's got, I think, the ability to possibly finish close on the feet as well if they stay up too long. But I think close is going to be able to you know, get inside, close that distance a little bit, and try to get some takedowns and try to utilize his strength as well. So it's not going to be that easy for Tamer as well. So back and forth I go with this fight. I think it's an extremely competitive fight. It could realistically go either way. This is another spot that I think got a side with a dog here. I'm going to go with close in what should be a very competitive fight that, again, will go back and forth and should be a three-round war is what I'm expecting. And this is another spot that I was just talking about with Casey that I think it's another dog or pass situation. At plus 155, there probably is a little bit of value in close in this spot. Again, I recognize the awesome win Tamer had and what he's looked as of late has been remarkable. I mean, the guy is definitely legit, but I think close is stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Tamer, and I think close is going to give him all he can handle. So the pick is going to be close to win the fight, and again, it's a dog or pass situation here as well.
Both of these guys are two of the better up-and-coming prospects in the UFC lightweight division, and they both were prospect killers in their last two bouts. I mean, Tamer against Vanetta, I was actually really surprised. I did not pick Tamer in that fight, actually, and I picked Vanetta. I was all aboard the Vanetta hype train, and, I mean, he came crashing to a halt. I mean, Tamer just schooled him over the course of three rounds just by being the more technical, precise striker. And close, though, against Diakhaeci, I mean, that was a fight where I actually saw that coming. I mean, Diakhaeci is a very talented, powerful, dangerous fighter, and he still has a very bright future. But with the way that close can mix things up, both on the feet and with takedowns, and how aggressive he can be, that's really where his biggest strength is. It's the fact that if things aren't going well on the feet, and usually they are for him, but if for some reason he's losing on the stand-up, he can fall back to the wrestling. And his wrestling is aggressive, powerful. He's explosive with that. And he is successful with his takedowns for the most part. He's got more than 50% accuracy, and he's been doing it against some pretty athletic fighters so far. So I would say Drakkar Klose is definitely a guy to keep an eye on. But in this fight, on the feet, I'm totally with Nick in the fact that Tamer is going to get the better of Klose in the stand-up exchanges. I mean, he is just so technical and precise, and he can mix things up a little bit better. I think Klose is a little bit more focused on his boxing, and Tamer with his kicking game, just I think that he's at another level on the stand-up. But where Klose can close the distance is with the grappling. I mean, this guy can mix it up really well. You saw that against Diakhaeci where that just helped him turn the corner in that fight. I mean, it shouldn't have even been a split decision, and he clearly won that fight. So for me, this fight all boils down to can Drakkar Klose close the distance and take Tamer out of his game. It doesn't have to be takedowns, although that helps, but Klose is also pretty solid in the clinch. I mean, he lands some good elbows and knees in the clinch. His dirty boxing game is above average, which you would expect from an MMA lab fighter. And if he can put Tamer on his back, that's even better. So if Klose can get that done without absorbing a ton of damage in the process, I think it's his fight to lose. It's just all about whether or not he can take Tamer out of his element. If this fight takes place in space, Tamer's going to win. But if Klose can close the distance, then I think it's his fight to lose. So my pick is going to be Drakkar Klose as well. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Alex Oliveira, who is 17-3-1 with two no contests, taking on Yancy Medeiros, who is 14-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Helping Oliveira -215, the comeback of Medeiros at +165. Right now over five dimes, Oliveira -200, the comeback of Medeiros is at +170. Another spot where line basically stay the same. Line margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action of this fight. It's another tough fight. I mean, off the top of your head, you got to think Oliveira should be the side here, right? I mean, the guy's looked nothing but impressive as of late. The guy has size. I know these guys have both been down at lightweight. Now they're back up to 170 pounds. And obviously Oliveira, his size was evident in lightweight division. I mean, if you look how he manhandled Will Brooks, a lot of us were kind of, it was eye opening. I mean, we knew the size advantage would be something, but not quite that dominant at lightweight. But obviously the weight cut was just too drastic for Oliveira. So 170, a better weight class for him. Same thing with Medeiros. I mean, I think he's looked better at 170 pounds as well. Let's not forget this guy was huge at one time and he dropped down little by little. He gradually moved down to 170 pounds, 155 pounds. So both these guys have fought in, you know, bigger, and they're kind of heavier guys that were trying to make the lightweight weight class. So I think 170 pounds is a good weight for both. Here, size-wise, it should be similar. I mean, Oliveira might be a little bit taller, but it's going to be, like I said, I think nobody's going to have a clear edge as far as size goes. I think strength-wise, Oliveira might have a slight edge there, but overall skill-wise, it's interesting because Oliveira is a pretty well-rounded fighter. But in my opinion, even though he's got most of his fights wins by knockout, the guy's best strength so far in the UFC has been his grappling ability, the ability to get the fight down on the ground, the ability to pull off a submission win. Like if you look at the Tim Means fight, for example, that was one. You look at the Will Brooks fight as well. That was pretty impressive, the dominant performance there. Muntasri, I mean, it goes on and on. So I know that he got beat on the ground as well in his two losses in the UFC, Burns and his UFC debut that he took on short notice. That was a come from behind, pull it out of, you know, your rear end type of win for Burns there, but he got it done. You got to give him credit. And then again, he got caught up in that choke, that triangle choke bleed from Cerrone there as well. So, I mean, he fell into that trap, but again, Cerrone off his back is no slouch at all. So you can accept those for being, I'm saying more of a ground fighter, and then he loses on the ground their way. But offensively, I think it's where it's at for him. I mean, he knows he's kind of a grinder. He knows he can catch your back, and that rear naked choke is definitely one that you have to defend and be cautious about. But here's the thing with this fight. Medeiros, typically speaking, has very solid takedown defense. He's not an easy guy to take down and control. So is it going to be easy for Oliveira to actually get Medeiros down? I don't think so. And if it stays upright, Oliveira, again, has some pretty impressive striking. It's getting better. Offensively, he's not bad. He's got some power on the feet as well. But defensively, he is hittable. I mean, you could say the same thing about Medeiros as well. That's what makes this intriguing. So on the feet, both of these guys offensively have the skill set and the ability to finish fights, but defensively are flawed and they do get hits. I mean, if you look at Medeiros, that's the biggest problem I have with him. I think, I mean, defensively, he has to improve. He's getting a little bit better, but I mean, in some of his losses, it's just brutal how bad his striking defense really was. His body, obviously, he's a little bit weak in the body, but not just that, how he shies away from some of the punishment or some of the punches as well. Not a good thing. I mean, he definitely needs to tighten up that defense. And again, last few fights, it seems like he has. So if that's the case here and he doesn't leave his chin exposed against Oliveira, I think he's going to have some success against Oliveira on the feet. So it is a tricky fight. Again, I can go back and forth on this one as well. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Oliveira because I think that out of the two, he's just a little bit more solid to me, meaning defensively, he's a little bit more stable at this point as well. And I think even on the feet, if it becomes a striking battle, which Oliveira probably will struggle to get the fight down, I trust Oliveira's defense just a little bit more than Medeiros. So tough one. At the betting window, I will leave this alone as well. It might be a dog or pass situation, honestly, here. But to me, I got to pick Oliveira. I just think he's slightly ahead of Medeiros at this point right now, and I've been a little bit more impressed with him as of late. So the pick is Oliveira, but honestly, it's not a confident pick because it's not going to be easy to get Medeiros on the ground here.
Yeah, this is an intriguing battle because both fighters want to do different things. Yancy Medeiros is a very good brawler. He fights at a high volume. When he's at his best, he's kind of forcing his opponent to abandon their game plan a little bit and just throw down with him. And those are where he gets in these really fun, rough and tumble scraps. And Medeiros is able to use his length decently well. And he's just the type of guy that just goes after it on the feet. Alex Oliveira, on the other hand, is a little bit more measured on the feet. He's a little bit more focused on his defense before offense. And he is, as Nick mentioned, even though he comes from a bit of a striking background, he has been looking a lot more to get fights to the floor and then win by submission or ground and pound. Alex Oliveira has had a lot of success recently doing that. I mean, as Nick mentioned, I mean, over and over again, he's been putting guys on their back. He's been grinding fights out, and then he's been wearing guys down and getting stoppages on the canvas. That's not what Medeiros wants. I mean, this guy throws, he lands four strikes a minute, which is a very high rate, especially for somebody that has had several fights go to decision. So that means, I mean, he is consistently throwing at a high volume throughout his fights. The problem is he absorbs almost 5 strikes a minute. So, when Medeiros gets in these kind of crazy brawls, depending on who he's fighting, I mean, he is absorbing a lot of damage. Alex Oliveira, on the other hand, I mean, he is landing about 2.5 strikes a minute, but he's only absorbing 1.5. So, I mean, he's a lot more offensively, successful, where, so if Medeiros wants to win this fight, I think he needs to really get in Oliveira's face without exposing himself to an easy takedown and just engage with him and force him into more of a rough and tumble type of brawl, because that's kind of out of Alex Oliveira's comfort zone. I mean, if he wants to stand up and trade, Oliveira will be looking to fight from distance, find opportunities for combinations, land some kicks. He doesn't want to just throw down and just see what happens. And that's kind of what Medeiros does at times. So, and Medeiros does have a decent ground game at times. I mean, he has pulled off a few submissions in his, runs, but I would definitely favor Alex Oliveira if this fight goes to the floor. So I just think if Oliveira can slow this fight down, then he's going to win. He's going to find some openings. Medeiros does have his major flaws defensively, and I think Oliveira can expose those. And I think if it does go to the floor, Oliveira should be able to grind this out, at least win a decision. Maybe he'll find a stoppage along the way, but Medeiros is relatively tough to finish. So I would think that Oliveira is going to win a decision in this fight. So that's going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have another Oliveira in Charles Oliveira, who is 22-7 with 1 no contest, taking on Paul Felder, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Felder -170 to come back on Oliveira, +130. Right now over 5 times, it's actually Felder -150 to come back on Oliveira at +130. So line margins have tightened up. The comeback is still the same on Oliveira. 2-way action coming into the fight. Another tough one, man. Oliveira, you cannot count out against anybody. He's got such a slick offensive submission game. We've seen it time and time again. I'm surprised, man. I tell you what, and it still amazes me because I know how good this guy is offensively, but his win over Will Brooks, I'm kind of scratching my head. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised regardless of who he submits anymore, but I figured Will Brooks would be game enough and smart enough and able to avoid getting submitted by Oliveira. I mean, you know, but Oliveira was smart enough to be able to quickly, I mean, halfway through the first round, exploit, you know, hop on Will Brooks' back and exploit that choke and get it done. So unbelievable that he was able to do that. So he does it time and time again. Like I said, offensively, he's game. But the problem with Oliveira is he tends to, when the pressure is getting to him, when he's not able to have success, again, we've said it time and time again on the podcast throughout the years, he's the kind of guy that will just kind of quit on you. I mean, and it's a shame. He's got that kind of quit in him against a tough guy that's hard to take down, that might have a lot of power in the feet. He struggles against guys like that. So I think Felder kind of fits that bill here, but Felder has to be cautious, has to be smart about the way he approaches his fight. Obviously, one mistake with Oliveira, he takes your back or gets a limb or anywhere around your neck, you're in some serious trouble. But I think Felder is smart enough to avoid most of that stuff. And if this fight stays standing, even though Oliveira is no slouch on the feet either, I mean, he's getting better. He can definitely score effectively on the feet in most cases and obviously do a little bit of damage along the way as well. But in this case here, Felder, he's been in a groove as of late as well. I mean, he's been training at Rufus Sport. I think that that's a smart move for him. It's taken his career, I think, to the next level because he's got some of that hunger, some of that confidence back. I mean, an impressive knockout win over Stevie Ray in his last fight. Before that, you know, he did the same thing against Ricci. So he had back-to-back knockout wins, which I think kind of needed to kind of get him going again as far as confidence goes and the ability that he has on the feet. I mean, he's definitely a very fun striker to watch. He's got clean technique, got a lot of power as well, and he does have decent takedown defense overall. So that's why I think it's going to be a tough matchup for Oliveira here. I think Felder's going to know what he's in for here. Sometimes, you know, you can't do much about it. You know what the opponent's going to throw at you, and you still can get beat by it. But I think Felder's smart enough to realize and try to come up with a smart game plan to avoid all that. In fact, I've been impressed with Felder even on the mic, man. I mean, I think the commentating that he's been doing for the UFC as of late has showed how smart he is on the mic, how smart he is as a fighter, how he thinks at least as well. And I think that kind of is only a good thing. We know that he's a very intelligent fighter, and he's going to bring that intelligence into the cage here as well, because he's going to study Oliveira, and he knows what he's made of, and he's going to probably get the job done. So all that being said, good fight. I'm expecting Felder to probably find that quit in Oliveira and get the W here. So I could be wrong again, because Oliveira is a tough guy to gauge, but I think that's how it's going to go down here. I think Oliveira is going to try to get this fight to the ground. He's going to get frustrated when Felder starts lighting him up, and Felder's probably going to get the stoppage win. But again, another spot that it's kind of tough to bet as far as a betting line goes, because always hard to bet against Oliveira, especially if you have to lay chalk against him. So for this fight, probably sit back, relax, enjoy it, and see how it unfolds. But the pick for me is Felder.
And this fight, I mean, it's tricky. I mean, Paul Felder is a dangerous striker, and he clearly, if this fight stays standing for extended amounts of time, he's going to win this fight. He probably will knock Charles Oliveira out at some point, but Charles Oliveira is a very sticky, dangerous grappler, and this guy has become very good at closing the distance against talented fighters and then latching onto them and eventually submitting them. I mean, you just look at the names, and these aren't even like over the course of his career. These are just names recently that Charles Oliveira has been able to pull victories off against. And Will Brooks with that quick first round submission. Miles Jury was a very impressive one for me, because, you know, that was a guy that had a lot of potential and a lot of hype moving down to the featherweight division. And then Charles Oliveira just wrapped him up and tapped him out. I mean, he had a very competitive fight with Anthony Pettis that, you know, was going either way in the featherweight division. And you look at the people that have beat him too, and I want people to not, take too much away from Oliveira, but, you know, Max Holloway beat him. Anthony Pettis beat him. Ricardo Lamas beat him. Those are all top guys. I mean, Pettis was a former champ. Holloway is the current champ, and Lamas has been a top contender, for the last like 3 or 4 years, it feels like. So I think, Charles Oliveira, Paul Felder's not at that level of the people that Oliveira usually loses to. I mean, I'm not saying he can't, because Oliveira, doesn't have the greatest chin. And I mean, he can wilt if Felder lands like some spinning elbow to his face. I mean, that's going to put anybody out. But I mean, if Oliveira fights smart and closes the distance, I think that there will be a very good chance that he doesn't just win, but he taps Felder out. So my pick is going to be Oliveira, but I'm definitely being cautious here, because I know that what Paul Felder is capable of as well. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we open with a women's strawweight contest between Tisha Torres, who is 9-1, and Michelle Waterson, who is 14-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Torres -180, the comeback on Waterson at +140. Right now, looking over five times, it's Torres -230, the comeback on Waterson is +190. And recently, some action coming back on Torres to set the line over 2-1, because early on, it was as low as almost a pick'em, which is crazy. So there's been all sorts of action coming into this fight. Two-way action. I mean, early on, it was all Waterson. Now, like I said, as we get closer to fight time, it's back on Torres. So this line will continue to bounce up and down a little bit. I thought my original line was pretty fair, honestly. Almost a 2-1 favor for Torres here over Waterson. I know Waterson gets a ton of respect, as she should. She's a very, very talented strawweight fighter. There's no question about that, especially, in my opinion, on the ground more so than anything else. I mean, Waterson gets you on the ground. She's so slick with her transitions. She's smart. She's intelligent. She goes after it, and she's able to beat you on the ground more times than not. And she doesn't need that, because she's a decent striker as well. So training at a good camp, prepares well, always game. I mean, she's just a tough out. But I think how it plays out here, Torres is pretty tough to take down. I mean, she does typically have pretty decent takedown defense. And I think on the feet is where she's going to be outscoring Waterson here, and it probably plays out that way. She could probably control her up against the cage a little bit and kind of win some points along the way there. But I think outside, even in space, in the, you know, the center of the cage, I think it's going to be Torres actually having a little bit more success than Waterson along the way. And I think it's going to be clear enough that she probably wins a competitive but clear decision in doing so. So I think Torres is going to do what she does best. And I mean, I know that as of late, we know we wanted to kind of see more than just a decision machine out of Torres. And she was able to do that at her last fight, surprisingly, against Lima, a very game opponent that, you know, she pulled out that choke. So maybe she is taking that next step in her game and able to finish fighters now as well. Not that she, you know, doesn't have power. She doesn't have the ability to, but more so than not. I mean, most of her wins have come by decision because she's that type of grinder. She just outpoints you basically and makes life miserable for you in the cage for three rounds. So I expect that Torres would probably come in here and get the W as well, because Watterson's going to be a very, very difficult girl to finish. So I think, in fact, if there is a probably an inside the distance type of finish here, it's probably Watterson maybe catching Torres along the way. So I don't think it's going to happen, though. I think it's Torres' fight to win or lose, and I think she probably gets a nod on the scorecards. So what should be a competitive decision, I still think it's Torres that gets a nod here. So my pick is Torres to win.
And honestly, I don't think this will be that competitive. I mean, Michelle Watterson is a talented fighter, and her grappling game has come a long way, but against the best in the division, she really hasn't performed that well. I mean, granted, she hasn't had a lot of experience against the best in the division, but when she stepped in there against Rose Namajunas, I mean, that was a one-sided shellacking. I know Rose is the champ now, so a lot of people would get shellacked by Rose, but I mean, that fight wasn't even competitive. And when you look at Michelle's best performances of her career, I mean, they were against Jessica Penney, and that was at 105 pounds in Invicta. And then her UFC debut against Angela Magana, who I don't even think belongs in the UFC, and then Paige VanZant, was a very impressive performance. I will give Michelle a ton of credit for that. I thought that Paige might be able to wear her down, and Michelle just got on top of Paige, beat her up, and then submitted her quickly, somebody that is very difficult to put away. So that was clearly a great performance, but you know what? Tisha Torres is no Paige VanZant. Tisha Torres is well-rounded. She is dangerous. She is extremely capable. I think Tisha Torres, even though Michelle's comes from a striking background and she's known as the karate hottie, I don't really think Michelle has that much striking power. I mean, you can go back and watch her title defense in Invicta against this old Japanese lady who was like in her 40s. I mean, they wouldn't even really list her age since nobody really knew it. But I mean, it took forever for Michelle to put her away, and she was just teeing off on her for multiple rounds. I think Tisha Torres is overall the more technical striker. I think that she puts a little more pop in her punches. I think Torres can... Even though both Watterson and Torres have a diverse skill set, I just think Torres is more effective even with her kicking game. So while Watterson will be a little bit bigger in terms of reach and height, I think Torres makes up for that with her speed and explosiveness. And then when it goes to the ground, while Watterson is a little rangier and she can wrap things up, Torres has shown that her ground game is continuing to improve. She's focused on her wrestling a lot ever since she kind of got exposed a little bit on that original season of The Ultimate Fighter that crowned the women's strawweight champion when she got taken down by Randa Marcos and Carla Esparza. So if this goes to the ground, I see Tisha Torres being in top position, doing some damage against Watterson. On the feet, I think Torres just outworks Watterson. I mean, she lands almost twice as much in terms of volume on the feet, and her striking defense is phenomenal. I mean, 72%, and she has faced some very elite fighters compared to Michelle in the UFC. So you would think that Michelle would have a really strong stats here just based on her opposition, but it's just not there. So I think Tisha Torres doesn't just win. I think that she steamrolls this fight and either gets a stoppage or just a very one-sided decision. For the most part, that's how Tisha has been winning her fights. So I would expect a one-sided decision, but I would not be shocked if she stops the karate hottie either. So my pick is definitely Tisha Torres. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have a battle between the former champion Eddie Alvarez, who is 28-5 with one no contest, and Justin Gaethje, the former World Series of Fighting lightweight champ, who is 18-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Happen Gaethje -245 to come back in Alvarez at +175. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Gaethje -175 to come back in Alvarez at +155. Another spot where the line would kind of bet wacky a little bit. I believe it got up to -265. Now it's back down to 175. So two action is coming in this fight. Up it went with Gaethje, down it goes with Alvarez, and there's going to be continuing action coming in that way, I think, back and forth a little bit on this fight as well. Eddie Alvarez, former UFC champion, one of the best lightweights in the history of the sport, really. If you look at his career track record, whether it was in Japan, I mean, early on in his career in the States, just everything that he's accomplished. I mean, it was a shame that he didn't make it over to the UFC sooner than he did, but he did have a great Bellator run as well, and you got to respect what he did over there in that organization. So a lot to love about Alvarez, and I'm saying that because, I mean, it's true. I mean, the guy's been one of the best lightweights that I've seen in my lifetime. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the skill that he brings, the toughness, the warrior spirit in him, everything, you got to love the guy. But he's facing a very difficult opponent here in Gaethje. I think Gaethje is the type of fighter. I mean, he wants to be known as the guy that brings the most violence on the UFC roster. I believe that's the case, man. I mean, looking back, obviously his UFC debut against Michael Johnson, that was an incredible fight, a fun fight. That was a war. I mean, the toughness that Gaethje displayed in that fight and the ability to actually come back and finish that fight and win that fight as well. Remarkable. I mean, Gaethje does it time and time again, though. If you watch all his fights from the World Series of Fighting or whatever you see him in a fight, you can tell that's the type of fighter he is. He's always bringing it. I mean, he's got no care defensively at times, and that could be a bad thing, obviously, because you get an elite fighter like Alvarez, you know, that can throw hands and has power on the feet as well. With Gaethje's lack of defense at times, I mean, he's got such a tough chin, he just, you know, he brings it, and he's not afraid to get tagged. That worries me a little bit always, and against all these fighters that he's going to face in the UFC, he's always going to be concerned. But Gaethje somehow, some way, finds a way to survive, even if he gets rocked a little bit, and then just brings the violence, as he says, even more so. So, I mean, you cannot deny the talent that this guy has in the warrior spirit. So you got two warriors really going at it here that both have the same roots. I mean, if you look at Alvarez time and time again, he's had to tell officials, hey, look, I do get caught sometimes and I get wobbled, I get rocked, but don't stop the fight too early because I tend to recover fairly quickly. And he does. You got to give Alvarez a lot of credit for that as well. So you have two warriors that recover fairly quickly that can put your lights out going out of here. But I do think at this time it is Gaethje's to win his fight. I don't know. I mean, Alvarez, in my opinion, I know he's working hard. I know he's in great shape. I've heard he had a great camp for this fight as well, but I just think his time is kind of past and the new breed and Gaethje and these guys. I mean, even though they're 4 years apart, I still think in MMA years, obviously Gaethje's much younger, than Alvarez, as all the wars that Alvarez has been through throughout his career. So I like that factor in this fight as well. I just think that I can't get that performance against Conor McGregor out of my head. I mean, that was not Eddie Alvarez that we're all used to seeing. I mean, that was a terrible fight for Eddie Alvarez. He backed it up. I mean, the performance against Poirier, he almost got put out of there. I think Poirier should have finished him, to be honest with you, in that spot, but I give credit to Eddie Alvarez. So in my opinion, even though he dug deep and he made that fight competitive and he's able to do that, I still think here against Gaethje gets him in trouble. He's going to finish the job here. Alvarez is not going to get a second chance against a guy like Gaethje. So for me, it's hard to believe that he's going to pull off the upset here for this fight. I think it's very important that Gaethje gets a W, even for UFC marketing. I mean, right now, getting a nod over a guy like Alvarez is going to go a long way for Gaethje. I mean, because he's the type of fighter that is definitely exciting, fun to watch. He could definitely draw a lot of fans, and really the sky's the limit for him if he gets this win. So I think it's important that Gaethje does get this nod for the sake of the UFC as well, because I think they have another star in the making here if he does get it. So important fight for both men. Alvarez wants to stay relevant. He wants to prove that he still belongs towards the top of this division, and Gaethje wants to pick off another awesome fighter, legendary fighter in Alvarez. So a lot on the line here, but in my opinion, it's just going to be too much for Alvarez. I think Gaethje is going to probably get rid of him. So my pick is Gaethje, and he probably does it by knockout along the way.
I think this is a very competitive fight. I mean, both of these guys have some flaws defensively, obviously, but both of these guys have power and knockout ability. I mean, it has all the makings of a very exciting fight. My only fear is if Eddie Alvarez wants to slow it down a little bit, maybe preserve his chin a little bit. I mean, that's what worked in his fights against Gilbert Melendez and Anthony Pettis. I mean, those fights, it was more about closing the distance, getting takedowns, pushing them towards the fence, using positioning and grappling more than the striking. I mean, really the only time Eddie Alvarez has had a great performance with his striking in the UFC was when he won the title against Rafael Dos Anjos, when he got that stoppage victory on the feet. For the most part, I mean, he's relied a lot on his grappling. So that's my concern, is if Alvarez becomes more of a takedown threat than wanting to being willing to stand and bang, because who really wants to stand and bang against Justin Gaethje? I mean, the guy is just like not human at times. I mean, he just eats these huge punches, and I mean, defensively, he clearly has flaws, and he eats these huge shots, and then he just keeps going forward. I mean, he gets rocked. I mean, he doesn't really get knocked down, but I mean, he clearly gets hurt, and then, you know, a minute later, he's fine, and then he's dishing it out just as hard. I mean, that UFC debut against Michael Johnson is one of the craziest, most entertaining fights I've ever seen. I mean, just look at the percentages that Gaethje has. I mean, he landed 10.6 strikes per minute. That is off the charts. And then he absorbed 9.3. You just cannot sustain a career doing that. So if Alvarez wants to throw down, I mean, I think that's at his own risk, because while Gaethje can get rocked at times on the feet and recovers, Alvarez gets knocked down and recovers. So, I mean, I think it's very dangerous. You're definitely playing with fire if you're throwing down. Now, in terms of technique, Alvarez is the more technical striker. I mean, clearly, he has some very good boxing fundamentals. He has good footwork. And I think he has the better wrestling game than Gaethje. But Gaethje makes up for it with immense power. I think he has very underrated leg kicks. I mean, they can really do some damage. And he just pushes forward consistently. Like, Alvarez is going to want to be the guy, like, where Alvarez has had that success with his wrestling, it was against guys that were more trying to pick their spots against him. Gaethje's not going to be picking spots. He's just going to be pushing forward constantly. Alvarez is just going to have to find those openings, and it's going to be through this constant pressure that's just wearing down on him as the fight goes on. Gaethje being training in Colorado, I don't really see him gassing out. I mean, Michael Johnson slowed down in the fight because, I mean, he just got tired of punching Justin Gaethje in the face. So it's not a great sustainable career strategy for Gaethje, but I mean, it's going to be as very entertaining as long as he lasts inside the octagon. I mean, he's clearly one of the more exciting fighters to be in the UFC in a long time. So the way I see this fight playing out, I think Alvarez will have some success early, but I think the pressure of Gaethje just wears down on him. And while Alvarez, if he does hurt Gaethje, I mean, he can really turn it up a notch. I mean, if he can hurt him like he hurt Dos Anjos and then just not let up, he might not give Gaethje an opportunity to recover. So that is something to look out for, and because Alvarez does have a very good killer instinct, but I think just with the way that Gaethje does recover and the way that he's constantly firing back, even if he is hurt, I just don't like the odds of Eddie Alvarez avoiding Gaethje's power for an entire fight. So I'm going to side with Justin Gaethje. I think that he's going to force Eddie Alvarez to fight his fight, and it's going to be very entertaining for however long it lasts. But I think Gaethje ends up getting the nod at some point, whether it's a TKO or a decision. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Henry Cejudo, who is 11-2, taking on Sergio Pettis, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Cejudo, -385. The comeback on Pettis at +265. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, Cejudo -255. The comeback on Pettis at +215. Interesting side note here. This fight was scheduled originally for UFC 211. I opened the line at that time for Cejudo -230. The comeback at +170 on Pettis, and it got bet up to over -400. So when we reset this line, obviously the line settled at around -400 or so. I dipped under that at -385, and all the action came in Pettis's way. So all you bettors out there that bet this fight up on Cejudo to -400, obviously did not come back in, and the people that were betting Pettis and the underdog. It's just crazy how the time has shifted between events like that and how the odds have changed. Because again, it looks like I agree with the line now more so than what I just opened, because it was closer to my original opener. I do believe that Cejudo does have an edge in this fight, and deservingly so. He should be a solid favorite. But again, I think at 4-1, it was getting a little bit ridiculous, because you got to give Sergio Pettis some respect. If you look at what the guy's done throughout his UFC career right now, the two losses that he has on his resume, I say it time and time again on this podcast. I mean, he was winning both of those fights, and he should have won both of those fights. So unfortunately for him, I mean, it is what it is. A bit chinny, makes a mistake, gets caught. I mean, Benoit was able to, you know, find a punch late in that fight as well in the second round. And then Caceres, of course, comeback win and got the choke late in the third round. But outside of that, if you look, I mean, he hasn't been beaten. I mean, he beat Carrazzo, he beat Calades, he beat Moraga, he beat Moreno in his last fight, where a lot of people thought Moreno was the next big thing that could possibly get a title shot as well. So he just keeps on beating these solid fighters, performing relatively well and getting better fight by fight as well. So that's why you got to respect Pettis. He comes from the Rufus camp. Obviously, we know the bloodline that he has with his brother Anthony. I mean, he's got championship DNA in his blood. I mean, the guy is a talented fighter. There's no doubt about it. You guys can say what you want about Anthony Pettis right now, and it's not Anthony that we're talking about, though. I mean, Sergio is definitely a different fighter. I think that he's improved fight by fight. With his training, with his ability, everything across the board has gotten better for Sergio Pettis, and I'm glad to see it because he deserves it. I mean, we don't give him enough credit, to be honest with you. It's always us talking about, you know, Showtime Pettis, and Sergio kind of just flies under the radar. But really, if you look at it in the flyweight division, he is one of the best flyweights that the UFC has had on the roster for a while, and he's proven it time and time again. That being said, it's a difficult matchup for him because Cejudo, man, have I been impressed with him. I was never really impressed, even before he made his UFC debut. I know what kind of athlete this guy is. He's special. No, there's no doubt about it with his Olympic wrestling background. He's a special, unique athlete. But from what I saw in the cage before he made his UFC debut, I mean, he didn't utilize that wrestling enough. In fact, he was more in love with his striking that was all right. It was subpar, in fact. I don't think it was really much of a threat at all. Again, before he made his UFC debut. And then actually, when he made his UFC debut, you know, some not dominant performances or some performances that were a little bit, I think, in my opinion, letdowns. You were expecting a little bit better from him. And then came the Benavidez fight. That came after he had his shot against Demetrius Johnson as well. But things changed during that Benavidez fight, because the time that he lost to Johnson, to DJ, to Mighty Mouse, from that time to the time that he fought Benavidez, the ability of his striking increased to the point where I was shocked. I was amazed. I mean, he sat there and he went toe-to-toe with Joseph Benavidez, and Benavidez is always one of the best, you know, obviously fighters, period, in the whether it was bantamweight division, whether it's a flyweight division. I mean, he's been at the top of the food chain for a long time, and we all know what kind of power and, I mean, he possesses and what kind of striker he is as well. So that turned a corner for me with Cejudo. I mean, that gave me confidence that this guy can hang with a top-tier fighter like Benavidez. I mean, he's showing me some things here. It really impressed me a lot. Even though he lost that fight by split decision, it was close enough. Arguably, a lot of judges would have gave it to him. So that was a big stepping stone, I think, for him, despite the loss. And then he bounced back in his last fight against Hayes and just destroyed Hayes. So the improvement continued. I mean, it's legit. What we saw in the Joseph Benavidez fight was an improvement, and he displayed that against Hayes as well. So that's why I'm even saying all this. I mean, he finally kind of got over that hurdle, and he became a special elite type of UFC fighter as well, in my opinion, because we all know he has always had that wrestling background, but now he has the ability to actually strike with the elite strikers on the feet and do damage and just put his power to work as well. So this is going to be a great fight. You have Cejudo's punching power, his improved striking, his wrestling going up against Pettis, which has been a sniper. We all know he's got a great submission game as well. I mean, I'm really excited about this fight as well. So I think how it plays out, though, Cejudo's power is going to be a little bit too much for Pettis along the way. I think Pettis is going to be more than game and give Cejudo all that he can handle. But I think the power and aggression of Cejudo's game, including mixing in some possible takedowns along the way, is what's going to get him the nod here. So tough as far as the betting window goes, because do you really want to lay that kind of chalk against a guy like Pettis? I think he deserves the respect in this point, even against a guy like Cejudo, that you might not want to do that. I think it's probably a dog or pass situation. So the people that gobbled up that early plus 265 line that was a tad high, I take my hat off to you. I think you got some great value there. I think we will see this line float back up a little bit closer to 3-1 as we get closer to fight time as well. But it is hard to lay that chalk on Cejudo, honestly, even against a guy like Pettis. So I'm going to pick Cejudo to win. I think, again, his aggression with his improvement in his striking game and his wrestling mixed in, I think is going to be just a little bit too much for Pettis. But we'll see how it all plays out, honestly. It should be a great fight. The pick is Cejudo to win, though.
I don't really think this fight's that close. I mean, Sergio Pettis is extremely talented. He's one of the more well-rounded fighters in the flyweight division, but Henry Cejudo is an elite wrestler who has power in his hands and vastly improved striking skills. I mean, this guy in his last two fights went toe-to-toe with Joseph Benavidez and dropped Benavidez and had him in a lot of trouble and arguably won that fight. And then just decimated Wilson Hayes and got a TKO victory. I mean, the progression with Henry Cejudo striking has become just immense. I mean, this guy is clearly becoming a threat on the feet when before he was just more of a, you know, is he going to just wear you down and just kind of outpoint you on the feet? Is he going to look for takedowns? But now, I mean, he clearly is a finishing threat. And I think that that's something to really be excited about with Henry Cejudo's development as a fighter. Now, again, Sergio Pettis is talented, and I think that he is a clear top 10 fighter, if not a fringe top 5 fighter in the flyweight division. But I just don't think he's on Cejudo's level. I don't think he can hang with Cejudo's wrestling. I don't think he has the power to hurt Cejudo. And I don't think he can submit Cejudo. So there's really not a lot that he has going for him other than a size advantage. I mean, he does have some reach, but Cejudo is an explosive enough athlete that he should be able to get inside. And Pettis does not have a good chin. That's something you have to remember. And with Cejudo's developing stand-up game, I think he can get inside, and it just takes one good shot. And I think Pettis will be in big trouble. I mean, just remember, Alex Caceres rocked Pettis, and then that set up a finish. Ryan Benoit blasted Pettis and got a stoppage victory. So I'm actually concerned about Sergio here. I think, this is a bit too drastic of a step up. I know that he's knocking on the door for a title shot, but I think Henry Cejudo is, in my opinion, the number two flyweight in the world at this point. And, Pettis just isn't quite there. And I think that he's going to get humbled a little bit here. And I think Henry Cejudo lays the smackdown a little bit with a brutal TKO victory at some point in this fight. So my pick is going to be Henry Cejudo. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight contest between Alistair Overeem, who is 43-15 with one no contest, taking on Francis Ngannou, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Ngannou -230, the comeback on Overeem at +170. Right now it's Ngannou -260, the comeback on Overeem at +220. Another spot where there has been two-way action coming into this fight. The line's moved up and down a little bit as well. It should continue to do that because obviously Overeem, I mean, legendary in the sport. We all know what kind of beast he is on the feet. I mean, shoot, the guy won a glory kickboxing, K1 kickboxing title, I should say. Not a glory title, K1 title rather. So he's an elite striker. He's always had that kind of striking ability in his MMA game as well. And obviously he's more than just that because he's got a ground game to go along with it. He's got the size, the power, everything. I mean, the guy is definitely an offensively gifted fighter. The problem with Overeem has always been his chin. I mean, that's been the concern. Back in the day, his cardio was real sketchy as well, and it tends to show up from time to time again, whether he gets in a grueling fight or not. But as of late, he seems to pace himself a little bit better. He's definitely a lot smarter than he's ever been. He knows that his chin's a little bit suspect, and he tries to defend himself a little bit better, which is good to see. But that being said, Ngannou gets a hold of that chin, and it's going to get destroyed. So Overeem, even though he's a talented striker and always has a puncher's chance in the heavyweight division, I mean, we saw what he did to Stipe. I mean, Stipe, in my opinion, is the best heavyweight in the world right now. And, I mean, Overeem was that close to finishing and winning that strap from Stipe. That's the kind of offensive, you know, talent he possesses, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. So Overeem, a danger for most in the heavyweight division, along with that experience and that championship pedigree that he's got. Tough out for Ngannou. But I do believe if Ngannou keeps this fight upright, he's going to probably catch that chin and put Overeem out. And I'm saying keeps this fight upright because I do think that's a path to victory for Overeem that a lot of us might not be considering. If I was Overeem, I would definitely utilize his underrated wrestling game and try to get some takedowns. I know Ngannou has shown really good takedown defense. He's not an easy guy to put on the ground and control. But that being said, it can be done. And I think Overeem, again, is the type of fighter I think that we don't kind of consider him to be that much of a wrestling threat, but he can be. And I think he probably will mix in some takedowns along the way. It's can he hold Ngannou down? And if he can, then obviously he's going to have a lot of success. He might even be able to finish the fight on the ground. But if not, Ngannou's going to bounce back up, obviously, and probably knock Overeem out. So it's hard not to pick against the talent that is Ngannou right now. I think the guy's a beast. I mean, I've been on his wagon since probably his second fight in the UFC, and I know the kind of talent this guy has and the kind of power, and just he's a scary dude, man. I mean, he's definitely on his way to a title clash at some point in his career. It's very soon, and if he gets this win here, he probably is next in line for that title shot as well. So I'm going to pick Ngannou to win. I think he does defeat Overeem by knockout and gets one step closer to that title shot, but you can never count out a true vet like Overeem, so we've got to be careful again where the line is right now. Minus 260, it's kind of tough to bet it at this spot because Overeem, again, is a very intelligent fighter. I think he's going to come up with a game plan, and if he puts it to work, he could pull off the upset. But my head still tells me Ngannou's going to catch that chin and put him out, so the pick is Ngannou to win.
This potentially could be a trap fight for Francis Ngannou. I mean, the guy, in my opinion, is a future UFC heavyweight champion. I mean, he has all the tools, the size, the power, the strength. I mean, he is scary, when he gets in the cage. I mean, he has absolutely destroyed everyone he's been in there with, and he's been in there with some pretty talented fighters on his rise to top contendership. Now, Alistair Overeem is a guy that is going to present some serious tests. I mean, Ngannou has power. Overeem has technique. I mean, Overeem is a former, you know, world champion kickboxer. I mean, I know that Overeem's chin is not very good. So if Ngannou connects at all with anything, even a grazing shot, I think he has the potential to put Overeem's lights out. So that's one thing you have to remember right away. But if Overeem is able to defend himself well, if he can stay on the outside and land good kicks, if he can frustrate Ngannou, in the stand-up, I think that there could be some openings. I mean, you saw that a little bit with Overeem against Stipe Miocic where, you know, he was just working on the outside, and then bam, stepped in and dropped Miocic in the title fight. I mean, it didn't keep working. Miocic was able to get him down and punch him out and knock him out. But Overeem definitely is a fighter capable of pulling off an intelligent game plan. I've seen him do that multiple times. I mean, he stayed away from Roy Nelson's overhand right. He closed the distance and took down some fighters that might have been a threat on the feet. So I think Overeem's takedowns could be a big weapon in this game. Now, Ngannou's takedown defense has been above average, but, I mean, there have been fighters that took him down. Now, that was earlier in his UFC career, but Ngannou did get taken down, I think, by Henrique, and Curtis Blaydes did get a couple brief takedowns. Now, they weren't able to keep him down, but Ngannou is a guy that just, I mean, he's exciting. I mean, how can you not be excited about somebody that just touches people on the chin and they go to sleep? So, I mean, I have to side with Ngannou just because of the power threat and just the fact that he is a fresh blood in the heavyweight division, somebody that is potentially be fighting for the title very soon. But Alistair Overeem is not somebody that is just a stepping stone. I mean, he's the number one ranked heavyweight that's not the champion at this moment because in his last fight, he won his trilogy fight against the former champ Fabricio Werdum. Overeem is a very capable fighter, and you shouldn't be sleeping on him. I mean, he beat Mark Hunt. I mean, that was an impressive performance against Hunt. It was an impressive stoppage against Arlovsky. And then, of course, before that, he even knocked out Junior Dos Santos, the first guy to really just steamroll Dos Santos with a big punch like that that ever happened. So I would say that Ngannou has a very good chance of winning this fight just as long as he can connect, but Overeem is capable of making him miss. So just be careful out there. I'm picking Ngannou, but Overeem at this point, I would think, is the more skilled, capable fighter. It's just, I just don't think he can protect his chin over the course of 15 minutes. So my pick is going to be Ngannou. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have Max Holloway taking on Jose Aldo. Holloway is 18-3. Aldo is 26-3. And this is for the UFC Featherweight Championship. Holloway most recently dethroned Aldo to unify the belts. So, Nick, where did you open this fight? And how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Holloway minus 270, the comeback on Aldo at plus 190. Right now, looking over five dimes, the main event featherweight title fight is currently minus 310 for Holloway. The comeback on Aldo is at plus 255. I opened it high. I didn't want to get burned on this number for sure, so I opened it almost 3-1 for a reason. I know that's Jose Aldo we're talking about. I mean, the greatest featherweight of all time. I mean, clear cut at this point. McGregor hasn't defended his title. Holloway, obviously, this is his first real defense. So long way to go for both those guys before they can take that claim from Jose Aldo. But that being said, right now, unfortunately for Aldo, it's not the best time for him, meaning that I think he is on somewhat of a decline. Obviously, Jose Aldo is good enough and still talented enough to beat most on the featherweight roster in the UFC division. But when he's fighting some of these guys, some of these elite level guys like Holloway, for example, I mean, especially Holloway, I should say, it's just stylistically, it's a tough matchup. I mean, the amount that Holloway brings when it comes to, I mean, the nonstop action in his fights, I mean, he always pushes such a high pace. He's a smart fighter. He's got good takedown defense to go along with it. And then eventually with the accumulation of punishment, I mean, he puts you away. It was pretty impressive what he did to Aldo in their first meeting. I wasn't really that surprised, honestly, by it either. Just unfortunately for Jose, it just, you know, I mean, two out of three fights now, he's been knocked out and he's had a pretty granite chin before that. But right now, that's a sign to me of a little bit of a decline. So I don't think he's going to fare any better here either. I mean, the guy is definitely one of the best strikers we've ever seen grace the octagon. I mean, Aldo is just a special type of talent, but right now his chin, his cardio, I mean, his explosiveness all seems a little bit on the decline to me. So Holloway is definitely on the rise. He's been for a long time. I mean, if you look at his track record throughout, I mean, you can see everything coming really. The improvements in his game, mentally, physically, everything about him. I mean, he's been talking like a champion for a while. He's acting like a champion and he got the strap. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The impressive wins that he's recently had. I mean, if you look at it, I know again, people could say Pettis is a decline fighter as well, but to me, I'm going to say it time and time again, I cannot believe he's got back-to-back wins over Anthony Pettis and Jose Aldo. I mean, if you would have told me that a while back, Holloway, I would have thought, no, I mean, he's good, but he ain't going to beat those guys. He did it. I mean, again, declined or not, that's pretty impressive task to accomplish there for Holloway. And I think, again, right now, he's never been more confident. And I think this fight, he's actually going to be more impressive. I think he knows what he's capable of against Jose Aldo here. So I think even though it's going to be tough and Aldo is not going to just give this fight away, Holloway's going to have to earn it. I think Holloway's going to earn it a little bit more clear this time out because, again, he knows he can put Aldo away. I mean, he's not going to be intimidated by that. Not that he was the first time, but I think now, you know, like I said, once you've kind of experienced and know that you could do it deep down inside, it's going to be a little bit more convincing for Holloway to do it again. Now, Aldo is going to obviously be motivated in this spot, wants to get that strap back. He's going to probably modify his game plan a little bit. I'm expecting him to throw a little bit more leg kicks in the spot as well, which those leg kicks can be devastating. So maybe we're counting Jose Aldo out a little bit too much. Maybe he does have a little bit left in the tank and more than we all think. And he comes off and pulls off this upset, but I don't think it's going to happen that way. I just don't see it. I don't think Aldo wins on the scorecards. I think Holloway's tough enough that he can withstand Aldo's punishment on the feet as well. So it's just a difficult stylistic matchup. And I can't believe I'm saying that because again, not no disrespect to Holloway at all. But again, Jose Aldo was just, you know, on top of the mountain for so long that I can't believe I'm saying he's going to have a trouble beating anybody in a featherweight division, but he is. That's the case here with Holloway. I think Holloway is just above and beyond what Aldo can defeat at this point. And I think Holloway is going to have another impressive highlight reel type of finish over Aldo. So the pick is Holloway to win.
Aldo has tremendous striking technique, but he just kind of can't figure out Max Holloway. I mean, Holloway has this unorthodox approach of using a lot of angles, a lot of stance switches, being dangerous both with your left and right hand, and then throwing just a high volume attack at your opponent. I mean, he lands almost six strikes a minute and he's been in five-round championship-type fights and main events. And, I mean, and he's been in the UFC for a long time now. I mean, he's been in the UFC since I think he was 19 years old. And, I mean, just to watch him develop and become one of the more elite fighters in the world, it's just been an absolute treat. And Max Holloway at this point, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to find anybody that can really give him a real competitive fight. I mean, the last time they fought, Max Holloway, I would say Aldo came out aggressive and landed some decent strikes. He had a nice little flurry against Holloway early in the fight, and then he just kind of ran out of steam. Holloway just took over and then eventually dropped him and then just finished him with ground and pound. It was almost sad to watch that fight. I mean, just seeing the changing of the guard. And typically, when a fighter gets dominated like Aldo did in that fight, they don't get an immediate rematch, and that wasn't the plan. Holloway was supposed to fight Frankie Edgar in this fight card, but Edgar backed out with an injury, and they brought Aldo in. And I just don't like it. I mean, Aldo has had several fights now where he has taken a lot of damage. I mean, you go back to his title defense against Chad Mendez when he got hurt badly in a five-round war. And then obviously the Conor McGregor fight where he just got embarrassed in 13 seconds. And then the only time where he's really looked good was the Edgar rematch when Aldo, you know, was crisp with his kicks. He was effective with his range and on point, but that just didn't work against Holloway. So he has now been hurt or finished in three of his near most recent fights. So I would say that Max Holloway shouldn't just win. He should win impressively. And Nick mentioned that maybe he'll come in with a different game plan, Aldo, and throw more kicks. But when was the last time Aldo really just crushed an opponent with leg kicks? I mean, I really can't think of a fight since the Faber fight when, I mean, Faber couldn't walk for like a week. But that was years and years and years ago. I mean, it seems like every time Aldo comes out and the coaches are saying, hey, he's going to throw more kicks, and everybody's like, why didn't he throw kicks? I mean, it just feels like the second somebody checks a kick and maybe Aldo, you know, gets hurt or something, or just doesn't like the way that his opponent's reacting to his kicks, I mean, he just gives up on him way too easily. And I think that's probably going to happen here. I mean, he's going to come out. Maybe his coaches are trying to get in his head. Throw kicks. Be more aggressive with your kicks. He's going to throw a couple. Holloway's going to check one or two. Aldo's foot's going to hurt or something. And then he's just going to stop throwing kicks because he does not sustain his kicking attack anymore. That could be because of injuries. It could be because of all kinds of things. But I just don't think his kicking game is nearly as effective as it used to be. So in this fight, I mean, it's going to come down to a stand-up battle and mostly just with their hands. And Max Holloway is just so much more effective at this point. And his chin is absolute granite. I can't remember anybody even hurting him. And he has, you know, been in some crazy slugfests as he worked his way up to becoming a better defensive fighter. But, yeah, Max Holloway, I just think Aldo cannot win a decision, because of Holloway's pace and activity. And I don't think Aldo can knock Holloway out. So I just don't see how Jose Aldo can win this fight. So my pick has to be Max Holloway. And I think he probably wins in violent TKO fashion at some point. So Holloway is my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 218. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.